This is The Draft Room with Brian Lowe. The Draft Room is your exclusive look inside the NFL Draft.
Okay, so we're moving back and giving up a sixth.
Think you know who will go in the top 10, whose stock is rising, and whose is falling?
There's a lot of guys with good value on those spots.
Who will Mr. Irrelevant be this year? You'll find out as we go inside The Draft Room with Brian Lowe.
We are 2 weeks away from Radio City Music Hall being the home of the NFL Draft 2011, 2 weeks from tomorrow. And in the meantime, we are here inside the draft room talking about the 2011 NFL Draft. My name is Brian Lowe here on Patriots.com Radio each and every Wednesday leading up to the draft from 12 to 1 Eastern Standard Time. We're talking the draft. Nothing better to talk about than the NFL draft this time of year. Very excited to be here with you, and we want to hear from you. Webradio at Patriots.com, Webradio at Patriots.com. Your draft questions, your draft preview, your draft, your own mock draft. We welcome it all here inside the draft room. You can even call us on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482. We like to give a little national perspective on the NFL draft here on this show, and helping us do that in just a little bit will be Wes Bunting from the National Football Post. He is the director of college scouting for that website, a great website for football news, football analysis, football opinion, and Wes Bunting does a sensational job on the draft, so we're excited to have him here on the show in a few minutes. Some very interesting questions I have for him pertaining to some of the info and analysis he has presented on the website in recent days, including a mock draft that they have posted today on National Football Post. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. We certainly talk plenty of Patriots here on Patriots.com and many of the other shows as well, but we like to vary it up here inside the draft room. We're in the second year of this program. And of course, we will be back for the Wednesday following the draft as well. Some analysis. We like talking about the Patriots, and we certainly can and will over the next hour and in future weeks. But we definitely like to talk about the league as a whole and what's going on in the draft. From a Patriots perspective, but also I think from a perspective of how teams manage their draft board, how they analyze collegiate players and how they come to a consensus organizationally leading up to the draft. I'll be very interested tomorrow, Thursday, Nick Caserio, the Patriots director of player personnel, will be holding a press conference, and I think he's going to be discussing a little bit of the logistics of the draft, how the Patriots organize their draft board, and I'm sure he won't get into specifics as it pertains to the 2011 draft and who the Patriots like and don't like. That's just my guess. But it will be very interesting to hear from him tomorrow, and I'll certainly give you my thoughts on that next week. So again, webradio at patriots.com. That is how to reach us. Very interesting note yesterday. Jake Locker, the quarterback from the University of Washington, one of the higher-rated quarterbacks, not quite in the Blaine Gabbert, Cam Newton category just yet, but in that category of four or five quarterbacks who seem to be potential picks in the late first into the second round. You know, Christian Ponder is certainly one of them, Ryan Mallett, guys like that. Well, Jake Locker supposedly, as we speak, is on a two-day visit to the Patriots. Jake Locker visiting Gillette Stadium yesterday and today. Teams are allowed 30 visits with prospects often, and I think most of these visits come after pro day season. There's no official pro day season, but generally the pro days are the combines in February. The pro days are generally in March, and then individual visits come in April. And, you know, the Patriots use their 30 of them, I believe. Sometimes these are, you would have to think, well, this is a player we are really interested in. One final look at him and for us to seal the deal. Sometimes they could be a player that the Patriots aren't really high on, but they want to get one last look to see if they've been wrong. In a lot of cases, it's just purely a guy they have on their board. They might have medical questions. They might, you know, maybe logistically they weren't able to get their correct personnel to his pro day, whatever the case may be. But it appears as though there's been confirmation, news reports, sports reporters, that Jake Locker is here on a two-day visit. What does that mean? We want to get into that. What does it mean that Jake Locker was here for a visit or is here for a visit with the Patriots? You might remember a year ago, Tim Tebow was here on a visit in April. Supposedly Bill Belichick, Tim Tebow, and maybe a few assorted others went out for a very nice North End dinner. I love a good North End dinner. Do the Patriots bring a candidate in and give him a nice North End dinner in Boston purely as a smokescreen? I mean, the University of Washington, that's a long trip for a smokescreen. That is a heck of a trip for a smokescreen. Is it a smokescreen? Are the Patriots genuinely interested in Jake Locker? In my opinion, I think if Jake Locker was there at 33, maybe they consider it. Maybe. But if you're going to tell me that the Patriots are going to take a quarterback in round one, I just don't see it happening. I just don't see it happening for several reasons. The same reasons that you might think as well. They just signed Drew Bledsoe. I'm saying Drew Bledsoe for a few different reasons because I watched the Brady Six last night and, Drew Bledsoe plays a role. That was a mistake there. They just signed
Tom
Brady.
You can do this damn radio show.
I'd love to get Drew Bledsoe on. They just signed Tom Brady to a 4-year contract. He's in the prime of his career. Maybe the late prime, but he's in the prime of his career. The Patriots love taking quarterbacks late in the draft, rookie free agents, as developmental guys, maybe a backup like Brian Hoyer has become. But the number of needs that the Patriots have for the first round far supersede the luxury of taking a quarterback in round one. Are they bringing Jake Locker in to have this vibe around the league of, whoa, the Patriots are interested in Jake Locker. We probably should be too. They know their quarterbacks. They know how to take quarterbacks. And the whole point for the Patriots is for someone to take Jake Locker either right before 17 or right before 28 to help one of their guy that they're targeting, slide to 17 or 28. That could be a reason. Are the Patriots bringing Jake Locker in and pretending to have interest in Jake Locker so that teams will say, whoa, they are seriously considering taking him at 17. We better trade up to 16 to get him and just try to mess other teams up so that their guy falls. Maybe they're really going to be actively trying to trade 17 or 28. They're going to pretend, we're going to take Locker at 17 or we're going to take Locker at 28. But, well, you know, if you give us an offer of a first next year, a second this year, and 2 fourths, you know, we consider it. You might want to sweeten that up. We really want to take Locker. That could be a reason as well. I don't think Locker is here on a visit because the Patriots are actively pursuing him and seriously considering him at 17 or 28. Now, to give a little context for what I said when I began this topic of Jake Locker, that he's a late first, early second round guy, as predicted, as I would have thought, as the days and weeks have gone on, and I think as the next 2 weeks are going to go on, we are going to see these middle-tier quarterbacks rising up the draft board. I think so. In Rob Rang's April 11th mock draft on CBSSports.com, they do a great job there.
We will have Rob Rang next week.
And we will have Rob Rang. Breaking news right here. This is news to me, but very good news to me. Rob Rang will be on next week. They crank out a new mock draft. I don't know if it's actually every week. If not, it's quicker than that. Every few days on NFLDraftScout.com, CBSSports.com, they're kind of combined. They have a new mock draft.
I just figured it'd be a good tease, you know, since you brought
it. It's a great tease, and I appreciate you doing that. On his April 11th mock draft from 2 days ago, he has Jake Locker going 10th overall to Washington. He's got Cam Newton number one, and he's got Blaine Gabbert number five, and he's got Jake Locker number 10. Three quarterbacks in the top 10. I'm not surprised because I feel like quarterbacks tend to, you know, they end up getting a little more overvalued as the days and weeks go on. And there are a lot of quarterback needy teams. And Washington, if they are pursuing and considering Locker at number 10, could be thinking, well, we want a quarterback in this year's draft. Locker is a guy that we're targeting. We don't think he'll be available for us in the second round. And Washington picks 9th in the second round, 41st overall. And they might try to trade down a little bit, but they might think, Locker is our guy. We are going to take our guy at number 10. Now, I tend to see mock drafts have Jake Locker later in the first, early in the second, like I said, along with Ponder, Mallett, guys like that, Colin Kaepernick, guys like that who are, you know, maybe not quite first-round grades across the board, but second-round grades. But maybe Jake Locker is going to go top 10, top 15. This is possible. So very interesting that Jake Locker is here in New England and trying to figure out, is that a smokescreen? Is it not? I think it is, but it's interesting nonetheless. Other news and notes around the NFL draft. Daquan Bowers. Back in January, say early February, when I was really starting to get a feel for this year's draft and who the top guys are, Daquan Bowers was the number one pick in a lot of early mock drafts, or number one guy on the big board, so to speak, without having specific team needs in mind, number one guy, defensive end out of Clemson. Tremendous athlete, can rush the passer, sort of the total package athletically, and in a draft that didn't seem to have, from the get-go, a number one consensus, he's the no-questions-asked number one guy in the draft, Daquan Bowers was becoming that guy. But he's got some serious medical concerns. Knee injury. Knee surgery he had back in January. The questions now, a lot of teams are asking, medically, will he pass our tests? Will our team doctor pass him? And not only, well, could we take him number one? Could we take him up number two, number three? But really, legitimately asking, does this guy even have an NFL future? If he has microfracture surgery, what kind of guy will he be? Will he just lose a lot of that athleticism? It's a big, big risk for a team to take a guy like that. Listen, the injury risk is ever present in the NFL and certainly in the NFL draft. Even a player who has never had surgery, never missed a game for injury, never had even a mild injury concern, could be injury prone come day one. You never know. There could be freak injuries. It's a contact sport. It's a physical sport. But when you got a guy like Bowers who has a serious medical red flag right away, and he's considered a top five, top seven draft pick, that's a tough call for teams. It's a boom or bust kind of call. Do you want to be that team that takes Daquan Bowers, say, fifth overall? Let's say Arizona. Or let's say, you know, let's say Cincinnati, fourth overall. Do you want to be that team that takes Daquan Bowers that high, and 2 years from now, he is, say, a middling player? Maybe borderline out of the league because an injury that you knew about before the draft has derailed his career. Big difference between an injury you knew about before the draft and an injury that pops up during his career. You know, that's the kind of move that could get a GM fired. What GMs are going to take that risk? There aren't a whole lot of GMs or coaches or decision makers in the league with the kind of cachet where they can take that risk and feel comfortable in their job. So the knee injury for Daquan Bowers causing serious, serious questions around the league. And Tyron Smith, the tackle out of USC, also with a knee injury. And the question, you know, he's another top 10, 12, 15 guy. Can teams take this risk? And, you know, I don't think Daquan Bowers is going to be there at number 17. And I don't think Daquan Bowers necessarily is the perfect fit for the Patriots. But you think maybe the Patriots are a team, if they like Bowers, that could afford the risk. And I say that in the sense of, it's not like Bill Belichick is thinking, wow, I can't take a risk pick here because my job is on the line. They also have plenty of needs, but they have two first-round picks. Could they be a team that, you know, takes a risk on a guy like Bowers, a guy like Tyron Smith? It's a tremendous question, and every year there are a couple of guys like this, but not every year is there a guy who is projected to potentially be the number one pick in the entire draft that has this kind of scare. So it's a question we're going to ask Wes Bunting about as well, but it's a question that GMs are probably asking themselves around the league. How do I rate this player? How do I rate these players, guys who are, you know, medical red flags but are that high in the draft? So that's certainly a question. You're listening to Inside the Draft Room here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is Brian Lowe. Here with you every Wednesday from 12 to 1 Eastern, Inside the Draft Room, and then available as a podcast and replayed on Thursdays. I got this wrong last week. I believe it's Thursdays at 2 o'clock we replay following PFW in progress. The Carolina Panthers on the clock 2 weeks from tomorrow night. Who will they go with? I think Cam Newton and Blaine Gabbert. I think it's going to be one of the two. I think it's going to be a quarterback. I think ultimately a team that has a need for a quarterback, and there are number one pick rated quarterbacks available, generally, usually, that will be the pick, one of the quarterbacks. So Carolina number one, Denver number two, Buffalo, Cincinnati, and Arizona, those are the top five picks the teams that have the top five picks in the draft. Of course, the draft, like we had last year, Thursday night is round one, Friday rounds two and three, and then Saturday rounds four through seven. The Patriots at number 33. They've got 17, 28, and 33. We discussed this a little bit last week, but worth bringing up again. At number 33 last year, St. Louis went with Roger Saffold, tackle out of Indiana, who they deemed was the best player on the board, and he panned out. Very good player for them, an exceptional rookie, better than a lot of first-round rookies last year. And the feeling around the league is, well, the gap between round one and round two, I'm talking about the time gap from when round one ends late in the night on Thursday to when round two begins early evening on Friday, teams have a lot of time to reassess their board. That could be a pick that the Patriots get a lot of calls on. I think quarterback is a position that there will be a lot of calls on. Think about the teams in the draft. Think about the teams early in the draft who you would say have a big need for quarterback or at least a middle-of-the-road need for a quarterback. Carolina. Denver, nah, maybe not so much. Could be a middle-of-the-road need, although with John Elway now running the show, he might have a keener eye on quarterbacks. Buffalo, yeah. Cincinnati, probably, if Carson Palmer's future is not in Cincinnati. Arizona, yeah, they could use a quarterback. Cleveland, yeah. You know, I mean, Colt McCoy, they're not going to take a quarterback in the first round, but are they sold on Colt McCoy? Can you rule them out on quarterback in the second or third round? I don't know. San Francisco, yeah, absolutely. Tennessee, no question about it. Dallas, you know, along the lines of the Patriots, they have a quarterback. I'm not saying Tony Romo compares with Tom Brady, but they have a quarterback who they feel comfortable with. Injuries last year, could they take a quarterback? And then Washington as well at number 10. Minnesota at 12. Miami at 15. Jacksonville at 16. A lot of teams in the top half of the draft. They're not all going to take quarterbacks in round one. So with these teams that have high picks in the second round, I think that's where the Patriots could come out huge. Fielding calls from these teams that need a quarterback, look at the early second round as the best spot to take a quarterback this year, and the Patriots being a team that would be willing participants in a trade. So I think that's where we're going to have some movement. I think potentially we'll have a lot of movement involving the Patriots, whether it be 17, 28, or 33, or some combination thereof. There's a lot of possibility for movement right around there. We hope to have Wes Bunting from National Football Post on the show in this hour. And among the topics I'm going to ask him are the National Football Post mock draft that came out today that does have two quarterbacks in the top three and has some interesting picks later on, including the Patriots pick, which we're going to get to. I mean, the Patriots picks at 17 and 28, you know, there's some consensus, not in terms of who those guys will be, but the pool of players. And we want to get into whether or not the picks that National Football Post has are that pool of players. But just as intriguing is Wes Bunting's projection, breakdown of which round certain players should go in. Not necessarily a mock draft, but which round certain players would go in. He has zero quarterbacks in round one. And we're going to ask him about that, about how he feels these quarterbacks should be rated, are being rated around the league, and where they might go. He's got a lot of round two guys, including Cam Newton. Why does Wes Bunting not have Cam Newton as a first-round pick? We're hopeful to ask him about that. A lot of other positions are, you know, standard for what you see in mock drafts around the country. But one interesting note is that he has Notre Dame's Kyle Rudolph as a first-round caliber guy. I want to talk about that a little bit. Last year, Rob Gronkowski was a guy who missed the entire year, his entire final season in college, and with a medical injury, a medical situation, a back injury. And the question was, how will teams rate him based on that? Is it tough to project a guy who missed an entire year in college and project how he will be in the NFL? Well, the Patriots took him in the second round. They leapfrogged Baltimore, who they felt good possibility they'd take Gronkowski. They took him, and we know the rest of the story. I mean, the Rob Gronkowski story isn't over, but he had a pretty good first year. Well, Kyle Rudolph missed most of his senior year, also with an injury. Didn't work out at the combine, but he had his pro day last week, and by all accounts, did pretty well. Now, prior to his pro day, Kyle Rudolph was seen as the best of a weak class of tight ends, I think it's safe to say. Not a great class of tight ends this year. A handful of guys with, you know, possible second round grades, but even that, you know, we were looking at the bulk of the tight ends going in rounds 3 through 4, I'd say, with Rudolph being the only guy with even a sniff of the first round, but even with that, more of a second round guy. He had his pro day last week and did pretty well, and it seems like there's some momentum now for Kyle Rudolph maybe sneaking into the first round. Where? Well, you know, hard to say where. You look at the, you start from the bottom and you say, well, these teams are pretty set at tight end. From Green Bay at 32, Pittsburgh, Jets, Bears, Patriots, Falcons, Ravens. You know, Ravens could be a candidate, but Rudolph is the best tight end prospect, it seems, this year. In fact, a lot of his measurables, height, weight, there are some similarities to Gronkowski in a lot of ways. And according to CBSSports.com, Kyle Rudolph ran in the high 4.7s at his pro day last Thursday. He had a torn hamstring that kept him out of a lot of last year and out of the combine. And that pro day, that pro day time of 4.78, 4.8, you know, is pretty good for a tight end. And you know, where will he go in this draft? I still think it's unlikely that Kyle Rudolph is a first round guy. But at this point, you know, it can't be ruled out, because I think some teams might compare him to Gronkowski in that he was a productive college player and missed some time, but is having a chance to, you know, during the pro day period of time, come up with a good profile, where if he's not late first round, he could be early second round to some of these teams. So I think the Kyle Rudolph tight end situation is one to monitor as we go forward here and figure it out. So the topics I've brought up are topics I'd love to hear from you on. Webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com. Jake Locker's visit, was that a smokescreen? Daquan Bowers, Tyron Smith, how are teams going to feel about them? And Kyle Rudolph as well. We hope to talk to Wes Bunting over the next half hour from National Football Post. We're going to take a quick break right now and be right back after this on Inside the Draft Room.
He's the model of speed and precision, a machine that picks apart defenses. This is Wes Welker, part of a last-minute drive to the end zone. He's constantly on the move, and he moves fast. You're just as fast. Introducing Verizon 4G LTE, the fastest, most advanced 4G network in America. With it, you can download a song from BCast Rhapsody faster than the average play can develop. Upload your favorite photo in 6 seconds. Share 10 photos in a minute. Stream video like you're watching an instant replay through a window. It's that smooth, that fast. And it's the only 4G network that can compete with Wes Welker.
Yeah, let's go again.
To learn more about Verizon 4G, visit your local Verizon store for a live demo, or visit verizonwireless.com/4GLTE. Rule the air. Verizon. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go Pats!
Indeed, go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Now's your chance. Hit up B-Lo in the draft room at 508-543-7482 or email webradio@patriots.com.
That's right. We'd love to hear from you inside the draft room. webradio@patriots.com. webradio@patriots.com. You know the email address. It's the same one for all the programming here on Patriots.com. We make it easy for you. We want to hear from you with your draft comments, your draft questions here inside the draft room. My name is Brian Lowe, here for another 30 minutes, a one-hour show every Wednesday, talking about the NFL draft. If you want to call us, maybe you're on your lunch break, sneaking out, give us a ring on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. The draft, April 28th, 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's getting here. It is getting here. You know, it's good that the, in a lot of ways, as uncertain as the NFL situation right now is with the labor, CBA, mediation, court cases, and all that, we've got the draft coming up. The NFL came out with the preseason schedule yesterday, which, listen, there's no question they've got to send out a schedule and get things in order, in the hope that everything gets worked out. But it's a good sign. I mean, it can't be a bad sign that the preseason schedule came out yesterday, I guess. And, Patriots have kind of an interesting one, I think. Jacksonville, Tampa Bay, Detroit, and the Giants. Some teams you don't always get to see. And, some young quarterbacks, Josh Freeman, Matthew Stafford, who, didn't play when the Patriots were in Detroit last year with an injury. So some young quarterbacks that maybe the Patriots will get to see. So hopefully those preseason games do happen, do go off without a hitch, and we have a 2010 season. But I'm sorry, 2011 season. We do have a 2011 NFL draft. That's what we're focused on. Like I said earlier, we're hoping to have Wes Bunting on, great draft analyst from National Football Post. Now, National Football Post did put out its two-round mock draft today. Just a little while ago, just a little before this show, and I was going to ask Wes Bunting exactly how much of this is him. Is it his mock draft, or is it a collaboration? And exactly, what his thoughts are on some of these players. And just taking a look at it, Cam Newton, number one to Carolina. That's where they have him going. And I agree. I think it's going to be a quarterback. And I'm thinking, as time has gone on, that it will be Cam Newton, because I think there are some question marks, different question marks, between Newton and Gabbert, but they both have question marks. I just think a guy like Cam Newton can be the type that can get a fan base really intrigued and interested in the season. And I think Cam Newton provides that. I don't think that should be the deciding factor, but I think the star quality that he has, the potential star quality that he has, I think is going to be enough to put it over the top for Carolina, and he'd go number one. Marcell Dareus, number two, the mammoth defensive tackle from Alabama, going to Denver. There's no question. The Denver Broncos' needs are defense. Just don't even think offense, Denver. John Elway, you might be considering offense because you're a quarterback, and there might be some talented players out there. They need defense. Their only two choices, I think, are take a defensive player right there, and Dareus, maybe Patrick Peterson. Those seem to be the consensus guys. Maybe Von Miller. If you don't do that, you trade down, you acquire some extra picks in the second, third round for defense. Defense is the name of the game. They were the worst defense in the league last year. So Marcell Dareus makes a ton of sense. Bulk up that middle, focus on stopping the run, get a space eater, get a guy who, draws double team. That's what you got to do, Marcell Dareus. Buffalo at number three, National Football Post has Blaine Gabbert. And I actually think they're going to pass on a quarterback. I think they should go quarterback. My guess is they pass on a quarterback and maybe go for Von Miller, who I think at that point will be the best defensive player on the board. And my guess is Buffalo is thinking we will take a quarterback early in round two. Maybe they even trade up to back into the late round, the late first round. They've got the second pick in the second round, number 34 overall, and I think you can get a pretty good quarterback right there, and I think they have enough other needs that they don't go Blaine Gabbert. But National Football Post has Blaine Gabbert going to Buffalo. I think number four gets very interesting, Cincinnati, because I think Cincinnati is a dark horse team to take Blaine Gabbert if he's there at number four. If I were doing a mock draft today, I say Blaine Gabbert goes to Cincinnati, number four. Now, three mock drafts that I have in my hand right now: National Football Post, Rob Rang on CBSSports.com, and Chad Reuter on CBSSports.com, all have A.J. Green going number four overall to Cincinnati, the talented wideout from Georgia. Now, what's getting interesting in these last couple of weeks is the A.J. Green, Julio Jones wide receiver gap seems to be shrinking. A.J. Green, consensus number one wide receiver all through combine season and really until the last week or so. But Julio Jones is making a move, it seems. It most likely Green goes first, but there are some question marks with Green, more off the field, and Julio Jones seems to be the complete package. But it seems as though Cincinnati at number four is sort of a consensus for A.J. Green's landing spot. I think offense is the direction they're going to go. Wouldn't be surprised by wide receiver. But I think if Blaine Gabbert is available, my hunch is Cincinnati goes there. And even if Carson Palmer is back, which that seems doubtful, even if Carson Palmer is back, I think they'd still have that need for a quarterback. Number five, Arizona, Von Miller. You see Von Miller's name quite a bit going to Arizona. And if he's available, talented defensive player, outside linebacker, I think he goes there, and I don't think he falls beyond number five. I think if he's there for Arizona and none of the quarterbacks are there, I think they go with Von Miller. I think if Cam Newton or Blaine Gabbert are available, I think it gets very tempting for Arizona to go the quarterback route, although they were really taking Matt Leinart 5 years ago in the first round, really screwed up their what happened with them at quarterback. Certainly, as an organization, they rebounded. They've been to a Super Bowl. But as far as that quarterback situation, since Kurt Warner has retired, there's a need right there. Julio Jones, number six to Cleveland in the National Football Post mock draft. Like I said, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, the gap is closing. The gap seems to be closing, and I do think both will be top 10 guys. I think if Washington at number 10, and we'll get there, if Washington at number 10 does not go quarterback and Julio Jones is available, I think that's a legitimate landing spot for him. As we keep going in the top 10, we're not going to go through the entire mock draft here, but as we keep going in the top 10, San Francisco, number 7. All three mock drafts I have in my hand right now, Patrick Peterson, the top-rated cornerback in the league, going to San Francisco. That's another team, like Buffalo, I think, needs a quarterback very much. And, we talked last week a little bit about how the draft and free agency, how free agency normally coming before the draft, now it's after the draft, that is going to affect how some teams view the quarterback situation as far as upgrading in the offseason. Not knowing what's going to be available in free agency, how free agency will work this year, does that mean a team like San Francisco takes a risk with a first-round quarterback, anointing that guy as your number one quarterback going into the season without having the chance to get a Mark Bulger, let's say, in free agency? Hard to say about that. But Patrick Peterson, the top-rated cornerback pretty much across the board, will he go to San Francisco? That seems likely. Seems like there is some consensus right there. Tennessee at number 8, Nick Fairley, the defensive tackle. Dallas, number 9, Tyron Smith, the tackle, offensive tackle. Washington, number 10, Robert Quinn. That's from the National Football Post. That's where they have their top 10 in the mock draft. And looking down the line a little bit at the Patriots, Cameron Jordan, number 17, the defensive end from California. He's a guy who is definitely squarely in that pool of players who the Patriots are going to certainly consider. And at number 28, Danny Watkins, the Baylor offensive lineman. Older guy relative to the draft. At number 28, squarely in that pool of players that we often see. So that's a little taste there of that mock draft from the National Football Post. And speaking of the National Football Post, joining us now here inside the draft room is Wes Bunting, their director of college scouting for the National Football Post. Wes, thanks for joining us. How's draft season going for you so far?
Busy, busy, busy. a little under the weather right now, but, you know, I'll try to play through it.
Well, we appreciate you doing that. We won't keep you for too long. We know you have plenty to do, but I certainly have some questions for you and appreciate you joining us. We see on the National Football Post you guys put out your two-round mock draft today, and I also saw on the website that you have your rankings, your sort of round-by-round breakdown. And my first question to you is, you have no quarterbacks in your round-by-round breakdown. You guys in your mock draft have Cam Newton number one and Blaine Gabbert number three. I'm just wondering, what do you think about the quarterbacks this year? Do you
feel obviously.
No, go ahead.
Obviously, I'm not a huge fan if I don't have any in the first round.
Right.
You know, I just have too many questions about them from a personality standpoint, from a willingness to work, first one in, last one out, that type of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, if I don't have convictions in a quarterback, I'm not going to put a number one pick on the guy. My favorite quarterback in the draft, Christian Ponder. I think he's the safest of the bunch. I think he's got a little Matt Hasselbeck, Trent Green in him. And honestly, I think that's the best we're going to get out of this year's draft class.
That's great analysis and unique analysis because, let's be honest, even now, actually, just for clarification, the mock draft that you guys have, is that your mock draft based on what you think teams will end up doing, or is that a consensus National Football Post mock draft?
No, that's me personally. I write that, and that's what I think the teams will end up doing. It has nothing to do with where I rank guys or anything like that.
Gotcha. So you have five guys in round two, quarterbacks that you think are in that that vicinity: Christian Ponder, Blaine Gabbert, Jake Locker, Cam Newton, Ryan Mallett. What is it specifically about Newton that you have seen that tells you that, you know, this guy, while he might go number one overall, really should be a middle of the second round guy?
Well, he just worries me from a standpoint as he's so physically talented, but is this a guy that's going to win football games for you on Sunday or on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday? And what I mean by that is, again, does he have that it factor? Does he love football? Does he have a passion for the game? And is he willing to work at his trade and better himself? And with Cam Newton, I can't say that he doesn't, but I can't say that he does. And again, from everyone I've talked to and the homework that I've done, if you have any doubt, I just can't see any reason to take a quarterback like that in the first round. Physically and athletically, absolutely has all the tools. And if he pans out, he could be the best quarterback in the NFL. But if he doesn't, I can see a lot of Vince Young happening to him, where he starts off early in his career and opposing defenses don't know what to think. He can make some good plays, he'll make some bad, but slowly, trying to only make plays for you on Sunday and win football games on Sunday, he'll catch up. I think defenses will catch up to him, and he'll start to struggle because of it.
As we get closer and closer to the draft, you tend to see teams start to overrate quarterbacks maybe because, hey, there's a lot of teams that have a need at quarterback. I see in your mock draft you have Newton number one, Gabbert number three, and now Jake Locker at number 25 to Seattle. Do you feel as though these quarterbacks might end up going higher than they should as we get closer and closer to the draft?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't only a quarterback-driven league. This is a quarterback-starved league. And when you need quarterbacks, guys are going to go a little higher than they should. And I think you could see three, four, five quarterbacks go in the first round, depending on who gets quarterbacks in that top 10. If the Redskins can't, if the Vikings can't, if the Tennessee Titans can't, if the Cardinals can't, there's a lot of teams late in that first round that would love to trade back, the Patriots included,
mm-hmm.
pick up more valuable picks for drafts down the line or in this year's draft, and let one of those teams go up and get the quarterback that they want, sleep soundly come Thursday night, as opposed to sweating it out on Friday.
Now, speaking of the Patriots, reportedly Jake Locker is here in New England on a two-day visit with the Patriots, who do have 17, 28, and 33. They also have Tom Brady, who just signed a four-year extension. This has to be a smokescreen, right?
Well, I think they're just doing their homework, mm-hmm. like any team. If you can get a potential franchise quarterback at 28, why not? You can never have too many talented quarterbacks. And unbeknownst to a lot of Patriot fans, Tom Brady will not play forever. So it's always nice to have a guy developing behind the wings that you graded out as a big-time talent. And honestly, if you got Jake Locker, I think playing in New England would give him as chance to be successful as anywhere else. And hey, if you think that long term it'll pay off, you know, it makes some sense, to be honest.
We're chatting with Wes Bunting, the director of college scouting for National Football Post, joining us for a few minutes here inside the draft room. In your mock draft, you have the Patriots at number 17, going with Cameron Jordan, defensive end out of California. And at number 28, Danny Watkins, the versatile offensive lineman from Baylor. Tell us a little bit about those two players. I think, you know, defensive end pass rush is one of the biggest needs for the Patriots. And offensive line, really across the board offensive line, is another top need. Tell us a little bit about those players and why you think they would be good fits in New England.
Well, Cameron Jordan not only offers you the ability to be a three-down player, but he gives you versatility on third-down situations. I think he can play as a five technique, create a pass rush out there on third down. I think the nickel situations, you could kick him inside as well. Patriots love to go to that four-man line on third down. I think you could play some three technique. And plus, with more and more teams going with only one and two-down defensive linemen on third down, Cam Jordan's a good enough athlete to stand up, create a pass rush off the edge. Could you imagine a back trying to handle this guy in blitz pickup? It's a tough thing to do. Danny Watkins, on the other hand, from Baylor, 26-year-old, former firefighter, former lacrosse player, or whatever other sports he did. But he's just a tough, nitty-gritty guy. He played left tackle at Baylor. I think he'll kick inside the guard at the next level. But honestly, if he wasn't 26, he'd be long gone by this range. Huh. I think he's a guy who can be one of the best starting guards in the NFL.
That's a fantastic analysis there as well. And the Patriots, you know, only 6 years ago, they took a guard a late first round with Logan Mankins. They had a need at left guard. They took him. They plugged him right in. You got to feel as though they might think the same for Danny Watkins. Now, in your round two, just looking quickly at the Patriots, and what you think, Akeem Ayers, the UCLA linebacker at number 33, and Ryan Williams at number 60. Again, if you could give us a little sense of why you feel they'd be fits, and specifically at running back, your thoughts on taking a running back in the first round, second round, or can you get a guy much later on where Ryan Williams fits into that?
Oh, absolutely. And what Ryan Williams gives you is a guy who can run from the gun. He can press space on the edge. He's a violent, one-cut guy, can catch the football out of the backfield. And like all these Virginia Tech backs, he can help out in blitz pickup and in pass protection. I think that's really intriguing, those three factors for the New England Patriots. And who was the other guy you wanted to talk about?
Well, you have at number 60 Ryan Williams, the running back out of Virginia Tech.
Yeah, that's what
Akeem Ayers. I'm sorry.
Oh, Ayers is a guy. He's a stand-up guy in the 34. He's going to rush off the edge. He's got some natural pass rushing ability, but at the same time, he's really raw. But if you put him in the right environment around some good locker room guys, which I think he needs to be successful, he's got a lot of upside and talent to his game.
All right, Daquan Bowers is certainly an interesting guy in recent weeks. You know, back in January, you know, he was a guy, maybe a number one pick overall, but now with his injury and with the surgery that he had, he's falling. Where do you see him? What do you think NFL teams, GMs, talent evaluators, what do they think of Daquan Bowers right now as we get close to 2 weeks before the draft?
Well, I think they're looking at a talented kid that has some knee problems, chronic knee problems. He's possibly could need microfracture surgery, and whenever you have a guy like that, you don't know what his future has in store. And this is just a risk versus reward pick. And I think if you look at him as a top 10 pick, I think it's just too risky. I think 11 to 19 is where he's going to end up going. And if he can pan out, you have a very good talent, but I think his shelf life is going to be pretty short because of it.
And we see, you know, Tyron Smith, the USC tackle, another guy with maybe some medical red flags, maybe a middle of the first round guy. What are teams thinking about him right now?
He's hot, Tyron Smith, right now. This is, in my estimation, the best tackle in the class. He's a potential blue chipper in the NFL. He can bend. Naturally looks like a 320-pound kid once he starts to physically mature. Remember, he's only 20 years old at this time. Played right tackle at USC. He'll likely kick over the left side in the NFL, but I think he's got the tools to be a really good tackle at the next level.
And you have him as your top-rated tackle.
Absolutely.
And the other guys, you know, Karimi, Sherrod, Costanzo, Solder. What are your thoughts on them? I we see the Patriots in a lot of mock drafts as a team potentially taking a tackle because late first, early second does seem to be a sweet spot. Can you break down a little bit of about these tackles and why, you have Karimi much higher and Costanzo more in the second round?
Well, I think Karimi and Sherrod are both good anchor players. Sherrod plays a little high at times, but he can bend, and he can drop that pad level. And if you can't anchor consistently in the NFL, you'll make every guy you go against look like a good pass rusher because they can just work the bull. And I think that's what we see from these two linear athletes in Costanzo and Solder, that they struggle at the point of attack, and until they physically develop, which I don't know if they can or not because they are narrow frame, they don't have that real wide base, I think they're going to struggle with power players throughout their NFL career.
All right, two more weeks until the draft. Can you give us a name of one guy that you think is going to rise and surprise everybody, all observers of the draft, and maybe one guy you think is going to fall a lot more than people think right now?
Well, I think Ben Ogdelana from Villanova is one guy who could sneak in that late first-round range. 6'4", 320-pound kid. Reminds me a little bit of Roger Saffold last year.
Yep.
Not as technically sound, not as polished, but he's a long-arm kid who can anchor, moves his feet well through contact, gives you versatility both to play inside and out. Guy who I think could fall, Alan Bailey, defensive lineman from Miami. He can anchor at the point of attack. He's a great-looking athlete. There's just no real pass rush ability to his game. If you're going to take a defensive lineman high, he's got to be able to get after the pass rusher. And Alan Bailey's one guy that, when you watch him on tape, he just doesn't do that overly well.
All right, Wes Bunting, National Football Post. Wes, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we can expect to see on National Football Post the next 2 weeks and draft weekend as well. What will we be seeing from you?
Oh, well, we have our new two-round mock draft out at the National Football Post right now. You can check us out for all the latest mock drafts, rankings, rumor mills, any updates that you need, anything draft-related we have at the Post. And you can also follow me on Twitter, at Wes Bunting.
Fantastic. Well, we certainly hope that you clear up the sinuses, get yourself in order health-wise before the draft, and keep pumping out this great content that you guys have. And we appreciate you joining us with some insight for a few minutes here inside the draft room.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Wes Bunting, National Football Post, their director of college scouting, spending a few minutes with us today. We appreciate that. And some very interesting insight, specifically as it relates to quarterback, because, you know, I don't know that I have seen any other draft observer really feel as though there are zero first-round caliber quarterbacks in this year's draft. And you have to make the distinction, as he did, between first-round caliber quarterbacks, quarterbacks that he thinks should be in the first round, and his mock draft where he thinks GMs will end up going. Because he has two quarterbacks in the top three of his mock draft, but zero quarterbacks that he feels are first-round worthy. And that's very interesting, because even Cam Newton detractors, even Blaine Gabbert detractors, for the most part, if you take a general wide view of the NFL draft, and previews and mock drafts, even those who don't think all that highly of Newton and Gabbert still think they're first-round caliber guys. So very interesting to hear him say that those guys really are not, and even pushing that further, that Christian Ponder, the Florida State quarterback, is his number one rated quarterback in the draft. You don't see that too often, and we'll see how that pans out. Ponder, in my opinion, is very impressive. I am impressed by Ponder, and I know I've mentioned Locker and Mallett earlier. You got guys like Andy Dalton as well, Colin Kaepernick. But I think I think Christian Ponder might be the safest quarterback this year, although there are some medical red flags. But I think as far as what he can do on the field, I think he might be the safest. And I think he's absolutely a second-round guy with some confidence, maturity, that he can be taken safely in the second round.
Yeah, having watched Christian Ponder play a lot of football in person, too, like, he's definitely one of those guys that's been a little bit injury-prone over his career, but he's one of those guys where when you're watching him warm up, you know right away that he can make all the NFL throws. Got a big arm, a little bit more mobile than a guy like Tom Brady. I won't say he has wheels, but he can definitely move around in the pocket. So I can definitely see where he's coming from in terms of a guy that would translate to the NFL game straight out of college. You know, a lot of these guys, you were talking about the Brady Six last night.
Mm-hmm.
You saw some of the tape of these guys that were taken before Brady, and all the college tape that I was watching on them on this special, they were getting outside the pocket, almost getting all the way to the sideline before releasing the ball. In the NFL, that doesn't happen.
It's a different game.
Yeah.
And it's good that you bring that up, because you know, the gist of that 1 hour special, the Brady Six, was, you know, Tom Brady is a Hall of Famer. He was going to be a Hall of Famer. He's taken in the sixth round. How does that happen in the NFL? That's the gist of this. How does that happen? Why were these six other guys taken earlier? And the Steve Mariucci soundbite at the very end, for those of you who watched it, you know what I'm talking about. For those of you who didn't, who haven't watched it yet, I don't want to ruin it, but I'm going to tell you right now. It was a sensational soundbite. Steve Mariucci was talking about the physical characteristics, the stats and all this of all these other players. And then he said, we couldn't rip open Tom Brady's chest and examine his heart.
Yep.
We didn't do that, and that's why he fell to number six. The footage of Tom Brady at the combine, it's like Kevin or I being at the combine.
It was comical.
I mean, it's stunning footage at how this guy was about to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. I've been to the combine. I've seen enough footage. You see what these physical specimen. I mean, he ran worse than the biggest offensive lineman.
5'2". It was unbelievable.
It was a borderline embarrassment. But teams are unable to literally or figuratively rip open a guy's heart and see what's in there.
See what he's made of.
And any NFL GM, now granted, that was 11 years ago, and teams, you know, things evolve and teams examine these players differently. They have much more extensive background checks, I believe. But teams that are looking at Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder, Cam Newton, Jake Locker, teams like the Patriots who are bringing Jake Locker in for 2 days, that even those 2 day individual one-on-one visits can only tell you so much. The Patriots are not able to look at exactly what's in Jake Locker's heart today while he's here in New England. Same with other teams. And that will always be a flaw. There will always be guys that slide because you can't evaluate that. But the gist of the Brady Six was, what can the NFL learn? What has the NFL learned by the Brady situation and how you evaluate college quarterbacks?
Yeah, and one of the things that I took out of it, B-Lo, is when you were describing the draft footage of Brady, I have Tebow at home. I paused it, and with the few guys that I was watching it.
What, do you think you're the only one?
No, but I'm just saying, some people don't have the luxury of pausing television. It's really nice because, you know, we paused it.
I did that 35 times.
And we were talking amongst each other, and we really got down into a conversation of, okay, what did they just show Tom Brady doing at the combine? He was doing the 40-yard dash, like shuttle runs, cone drills. He was doing vertical leap, and, you know, he was historically bad in all these things. But when you think about it, how many of those skills do you really need to excel at to be a good NFL quarterback? And it's like, now it's to the point where you look at these guys like the Giovanni Carmazzis and the other guys that, you know, get drafted well ahead of him that never even threw an NFL touchdown, never mind, you know, did what Brady did. And you look at the film on them and you do a little bit of digging. Yep. And when you look at them playing in college, yeah, they're good players. They show a lot of heart. They put up big numbers, but when you look at the skill set, the arm's really not there. And in the NFL, I mean, as great as Mike Vick did, legs on a quarterback, like, it's just not the most important thing. It's what's between the ears and having the arm to make the throws, the tight throws.
Well, you've got the film. And that's, you know, you hear from a lot of talent evaluators, the film doesn't lie. And it doesn't. I mean, the game film, that's the game film. That's what you see. There's the combine and the pro day and all the measurables and all the physical characteristics and all that, the 40-yard dash time, which is a part of the package, but I think it's a relatively small part of the package. It's part of it. And then there's the intangibles. Then there's, what do you learn from a guy when you have the one-on-one visit? What do you learn when you do a background check? What do you learn when you try to examine the heart and what's inside, what's in the brain? And those are all part of the puzzle. You know, I think when we hear from Nick Caserio tomorrow, and I've talked to Nick Caserio in the past, interviewed him about how do you come to a consensus and how do you complete the picture on a player, and it's all a piece of the puzzle. You can't know everything. You can't be right on everything. But are teams learning that the heart and the brain and the intangibles have to be a bigger factor than the measurables?
I mean, a program that kind of jumped out to me, B-Lo, and I know you might agree with me on this, is when you're looking at these guys in their college films, there have been some guys that have put up historic numbers in terms of passing yardage, completion percentage, and also touchdowns. And you think of a school like Texas Tech that just throws the ball 50, 55 times a game, and you get a guy like Graham Harrell who comes out and doesn't even get drafted. It kind of shows you that things are evolving a little bit. Because I think back at the time Brady got drafted, if you had a guy with the numbers that a guy like Graham Harrell did at Texas Tech, I think he definitely would have been drafted.
But you need to know what was Graham Harrell asked of?
Oh,
what
exactly.
was asked of Graham Harrell? How complex was the offense? What kind of skill position players did they have? What kind of offensive coordinator did they have? What was the opposition like? And that is a big part of, you know, being able to complete the pass on the college level and complete and master your playbook on the college level, that might have nothing to do with mastering the playbook on the NFL level. And that is relatively easy for NFL talent evaluators to come up to figure out. Okay, what kind of offense was this college player in? Was it a spread offense, shotgun? That's the easy stuff. It's for the guy who didn't have a complex offense in college. Well, does that mean he's not capable of running a complex offense? Is it just, hey, he was at a college that has a coach that's been there for 30 years and that's how he does it? That's what's hard to measure. That's what they have to measure.
And I think one of the biggest changes for a young quarterback coming out of college is you're used to throwing to receivers that might be 5, 8, sometimes 10 yards open because you're playing against these jag corners who will never even get a workout in the
Absolutely.
NFL. And then all of a sudden you're expected to put a ball to a guy like Randy Moss or Wes Welker, whoever, that's only a yard open. And that's the big difference. The window is so much smaller.
So a lot of factors for teams to consider, and it'll never be an exact science. And the Brady 6 documentary, if you haven't seen it, make sure you do. It's pretty good. Is just one extreme example. And by the way, a sidebar item from that is really the Drew Henson story, which, boy, they could have a separate 1-hour documentary on Drew Henson. Who
you could easily. You know what I thought of? A 30 for 30. That could easily be a 30 for 30.
And you hear them say that Charlie Casserly, GM of the Texans at the time, you know, would have taken Drew Henson number one overall in 2001 if he came out and had the really sensational stuff. So that was really interesting. Certainly here during draft season, very interesting as well. Inside the Draft Room, coming your way every Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. Two shows just about in the books. We've got two more before the draft, and then one more will come the Wednesday following the draft. We'll recap what the Patriots do and really what happens league-wide, the draft coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow. So we covered a lot of ground here today. Jake Locker visiting New England, which was probably the biggest New England-based draft news item story this week. And whether that's a smokescreen or not, I don't think the Patriots take a quarterback in round one, but maybe they do. Maybe they consider a quarterback, and really a blue chipper to groom as Brady's replacement sometime down the line. Maybe they're trying to drum up interest, in other teams, moving up, there. So we also talked to Wes Bunting, got some very interesting insight from him. He's got Cameron Jordan and, Danny Watkins as the first round guys for the Patriots, Akeem Ayers and Ryan Williams as the second round guys for the Patriots in their 2-round mock draft on a National Football Post. That mock draft just came out today, and you can check out National Football Post for more on that. And as we look at CBSSports.com, Rob Rang, who will join us next week. We expect to have him really a across-the-board, year-round draft guy. This guy's really good. He's got J.J. Watt coming to the Patriots at number 17, the defensive end from Wisconsin, and Danny Watkins, 28. And then Chad Reuter, also from CBSSports.com, Akeem Ayers, number 17, and Cameron Hayward coming to the Patriots. So as I've looked at mock drafts, really all these guys, J.J. Watt, Cameron Hayward, Cameron Jordan, Danny Watkins, Akeem Ayers, there's a pool of players that I think is 8 to 10 deep that I think almost across the board, these are the guys you see in the mock drafts going to the Patriots, 17, 28, and 33. As I say that, I also say, look at all your mock drafts from over the years in the final weeks leading up to the draft and rip them up, because the Patriots never, really never go in that direction. You know, Devin McCourty was nowhere near the Patriots in any mock draft last year. Gerard Mayo, really up until the day before. The day before, Don Banks had Gerard Mayo being going to the Patriots, and he had the exact trade. 2009, Patrick Chung, not a first rounder, but early in the second round. Who had him as the first guy going to the Patriots? You know, really, no, you never see the Patriots end up doing what the mock drafts have them doing. But we'll see this year. There's really that pool of players. Defensive ends, outside linebacker, pass rush types, offensive linemen, those are really the consensus, the areas that the Patriots will be looking to go. Webradio at Patriots.com. That's how to reach us. Email us anytime between now and next Wednesday at noon Eastern. We'll talk to you. We'll hear from you on the next edition of the Inside the Draft Room. Our thanks to Wes Bunting from National Football Post for joining us today. We will see you next time, next week, here inside the Draft Room.